Welcome to the Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast. I'm Sarah Polinchek. I'm here today with John Summers Flanagan.
That's right. And I'm John Summers Flanagan. And it's great to be here today, Sarah Polinchek.
So I've been in suspense since the last time we recorded because we ended our last episode with John having this big secret. And I really don't know what it is.
Yeah. John. I feel like I'm keeping everybody really with this great anticipation. So the title of this episode is The Secret Self-Regulation Cure, and then in parentheses, really, seriously this time.
So you're going to let it out.
I'm letting it out.
Okay.
Yeah. Before I do, I have another secret,
okay,
but it's not really a secret, and that is that I'd like to thank the Engelhard Foundation as well as NPEN.org for supporting and sponsoring our podcasts.
All right, and I'd like to thank our listeners for holding out and waiting for this big announcement that you have.
Yeah.
All right, John, so what is the secret?
Well, in my opinion, IMHO, as you might do on social media.
Okay.
Do you know what that means?
Not really.
IMHO is in my humble opinion.
Oh, in my, I got that. You even know, though, I'm not the best at social media. So.
Yeah, okay. Even though I'm not acting that humble about it. But after a lot of study and a lot of years, I've decided that the secret to self-regulation all boils down to what Mary Cover Jones discovered in 1924.
Oh, good. I'm excited. I love Mary Cover Jones.
Mary Cover Jones is amazing. You can be her friend on Facebook, although she has passed away. But you can still be her friend on Facebook. She has a Facebook page.
Okay.
She was an early behaviorist.
Okay.
And what she discovered is the essential principle of counter conditioning. In research with dozens of anxious and fearful children, she found that she could make their fear go away.
Cool.
She could regulate them.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right. I kind of know the story, so tell me more.
So what she did was she found that what she needed was a counter-conditioning stimulus because all the children had fears, right? And they were often afraid of white mice or rats, and they were afraid of other kinds of things. And so what she would do is she would have the fearful thing be presented to the child along with the child eating a cookie.
Yeah.
And so the two things being paired repeatedly over and over again. And the classic story was she had the white rat in the corner of the room. She had the child eating a cookie. So pretty soon, the child could eat the cookie and hold the white rat in his or her lap and not feel fear.
Okay, so wait a second.
Yeah.
So the child was terrified of the rat.
Yes.
But when the child would eat the cookie, they were able to let the rat become closer and closer to them because they were being soothed somehow by the cookie.
Over time, and I know you don't like using cookies as rewards.
I don't.
And we don't have to use those. It doesn't have to be exclusively that. What she said is you need to have a positive, desirable stimulus that will produce positive and comforting feelings. Now, one of the things that we can use instead of a cookie is the ability to do some deep breathing or relaxation techniques or mindfulness meditation. All of those can be substituted for the cookie. And here's where it gets kind of complicated. Almost all of our anxiety that we have and fear that we have in the world, it's associated with different things for different people, right? I mean, I might be afraid of elevators. I have some kids I know who are afraid of dogs. And when those things can be paired repeatedly with a soothing stimulus, pretty soon over time, the soothing stimulus takes over, or the soothing response takes over, and replaces or extinguishes the anxiety response.
Okay. In our last episode, John, we were talking about a kid named David, whose mom was potty training him, and it didn't go well. Remember that?
Yes.
It kind of blew up, and the kid got to a place where he just didn't like bathrooms. He had an averse reaction to bathrooms. And so what she did was she just started to make bathrooms fun.
Right.
Played music, read books, danced around, was goofy in the bathroom, and it really was helpful. So this is what you're talking about,
this is what I'm talking about. Counter-conditioning. Okay. She presented some pleasant activities, or we call them stimuli when we're talking in science, but She presented something that was positive and pleasant and paired it with a situation that was anxiety-provoking or aversive.
Okay.
Over time, the positive took over.
Yeah.
Now, one of the keys is you have to make sure that there's not a re-traumatization that occurs. For example, if in the process of her doing the positive stimulus, David falls in the toilet, gets hurt, you know, then you can re-traumatize or trigger more anxiety and fear. But if over time you can successfully present the pleasant, comforting, soothing stimulus along with the one that is disturbing, you can get rid of the disturbing one.
This is just, my mind is just exploding right now, John. Okay. So I'm thinking of all the other examples that this can be generalized to, right? Like I'm thinking of people who have anxiety, like really struggle with anxiety, and so then they have their pets with them a lot.
Right.
So is that, now I'm exactly. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. That's why having a companion pet can help people with high anxiety deal with difficult situations because they have their comforting stimulus with them.
Yeah.
Now, the reality is it doesn't make all the anxiety go away, but I'm sure many people who have pet companions would testify to the fact that it helps.
Definitely. I can
see it. Reduces the anxiety.
Okay. What other examples do we have for how to make this work?
Well, let me go back to another guy who did some research, and he did research on meditation, and his name was Herbert Benson, and he was at Harvard, and a number of years ago, he wrote a book, like 1975, called The Relaxation Response, and what he said is we just need four things to have a relaxation response. The first one is a comfortable position, right?
Okay.
Comfortable position. Second one is a quiet place.
Okay.
Now, those are pretty simple. Often hard to achieve,
right?
Right? But they're pretty simple and straightforward. Now, the next two are more complicated. The third one is you need a mental device. By that, he meant you need something to focus on in your brain. Now, the way the yogis and the people who are into meditation talk about it is they say your brain is like a yapping dog. It barks and barks and barks all the time.
Okay.
Okay? And so you need a mental device because the mental device is like a bone that the brain can chew on.
Okay.
And that stops the brain from barking. Now, the mental device can be almost anything that's non-disruptive. You can use the old classic om.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
You can use the number one and just say one, one, over and over again in your head.
Okay.
You can use anything. You can use an image. If you have somebody who you feel very comfortable with and that person's soothing, if you had a companion pet and then you had an image of the companion pet come into your mind repeatedly and you're focusing on that, people often use prayer or other kinds of things to focus on.
Could you use music?
You could use music as long as it's not music that is too stimulating, right? Because the goal, the objective is relaxation.
Okay.
And peacefulness and calmness. And so if you have music that you get caught up in and
you get really energized and start singing the words, now you've taken yourself out of this process.
Right. That's why a lot of the people who do massage will have what we call space music or yoga music that they play in the background. It doesn't really have a catchy tune, but just some peaceful sounds.
Okay. I'm holding on to this image of the bone, so it's making sense to me.
Helping your brain chew the bone, gnaw on the bone instead of... Now, of course, here's the trick.
Okay.
There's a fourth component, and it's called a passive attitude. And the reason, and this is the complex part of it, the reason you have to have a passive attitude is because no one on the planet can successfully focus on the mental device without becoming distracted. So here's what happens.
Okay.
You decide to do some meditation and you think, oh, I'm going to use om, I'm going to say it. And you do it maybe and you're saying om, and then pretty soon you notice yourself thinking about, oh, you had a difficult conversation with somebody yesterday, and it comes back in your brain and you start thinking, oh, that person, I was so hurt by this and it makes me mad. And then you think, oh, wait. Wait, I'm meditating.
Oh, yeah, I'm at peace.
Right. The brain stopped chewing on the bone.
Yeah.
And then the troubling, oftentimes, and this is one of the puzzling things about the human brain, you know, most of us, when we lay awake at night, we do not lay awake thinking pleasant thoughts.
Right? I'm not the only one?
No, okay. You're not the only one. Everybody lays awake thinking of the worst thing that they did that day, mm-hmm. or the worst thing they have to face tomorrow, or some uncomfortable spot in their body, like, oh, my back hurts. Oh, no. I wonder if that means that I've got this. You know, and so mm-hmm. we go on and on. And so it's just a natural thing to have our mind take off on the unpleasant. The unpleasant from yesterday, the unpleasant for tomorrow, mm-hmm. or the unpleasant right now. And so if instead we can replace that with our comforting stimulus, our comforting thought, mm-hmm. you can even use comforting kinds of behaviors. And one of the traditional methods of deep relaxation is progressive muscle relaxation, where you alternatively tense your muscles and then relax them. Mm-hmm. Usually one muscle group at a time. And so it's like you go from your feet and your toes all the way up to your face. Mm-hmm. And then if you can keep concentrating on that, that can become the comforting stimulus, right?
So what do I do if I'm going through the progressive muscle relaxation and let's say I get to my knee mm-hmm. and then I start thinking about some annoying thing that happened? Then what do I do?
I'm really glad you asked that mm-hmm. question. That's where you use the passive attitude. That's where you say, oh, I noticed that I started thinking about something and it was a distraction, mm-hmm. but that's okay. Mm-hmm. I'm a human. I get distracted. I'm going to go back to my knee.
Okay. So you don't have to beat yourself up and get upset that you're not. I'm just not the kind of person that can do the kind of stuff, right?
Yeah. Of course, nobody can possibly focus perfectly on every muscle group in progressive muscle relaxation. Nobody can possibly meditate perfectly, probably for more than a minute.
Okay. So when we go into this, it's almost like we could look forward to messing up and not being perfect at it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So here's what I do sometimes when working with people who have insomnia, mm-hmm. and you tell me what you think because you're kind of a sleep expert. And I do this in sort of a funny way, but I'm using Herbert Benson's ideas and I'm using Mary Cover Jones' ideas. And so I'll say to them, I want you to just try because, you know, it's important to have that mental device. Mm-hmm. So I want you to just try thinking of something. And how about we just try counting your breaths? Because we know breathing is very relaxing. Mm-hmm. And so let's just count your breaths and you just count from 1 to 10. So we breathe. And sometimes I'll do it in session with people, and other times I'll give them the assignment to try that when they go to bed.
Okay.
Now, what almost always happens is that people will get distracted before they get to 10.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah,
I
mean, especially if they're breathing slowly.
Right. I mean, 10 doesn't seem like it should be that hard, but I've tried doing all this, John. I want you to know that, and it's hard.
Some days I can't get past 4.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'll think, what?
So what do? You breathe to 4, and then what happens?
And then you adopt a passive attitude, and you say, oh, I noticed I'm thinking about what I want to have for breakfast. But that's right, I was counting my breaths. I'm going to go back to 1. Mm-hmm. So whenever you lose track, you go back to 1. Mm-hmm. And then you just keep doing that, and sometimes if you make it to 10, you go back to 1. Doesn't matter. Whatever you do, you go back to 1. Mm-hmm. Now, then after that, I say to people, well, in fact, you might even just skip going any further than 1. Mm-hmm. Every breath can be the same. 1. 1. And that's really a better way to do it because our mind gets so caught up in 2. Oh, wait, next is 3. And then so we become too focused and it almost keeps us awake. That's one of the problems with counting sheep.
Yeah.
Is that we start trying to, you know, remember what number we're on.
Yeah.
And that disrupts us, disrupts the passive attitude that we need.
Yeah. I have a challenge here. One of the things that happens with me is that I'll be counting, and I feel like I've got another running message in my brain at the same time that mm-hmm. I'm counting. And I'm not sure how to shut that message off, but it's saying to myself, oh my gosh, you have to present in front of 60 people tomorrow, and you need your sleep. You have to be rested. Oh my gosh. 1, 2. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I feel like it's running concurrently. Mm-hmm. How do I count and breathe and stop that voice that's happening at the same time?
Yeah. What I would say is that you probably need to have a more compelling stimulus.
Okay.
And I think that I wouldn't count. I would just actually stay with the number 1. But I might also do a little body scan at the same time where you're curling your toes and relaxing your toes. I also might use a phrase instead of just the number 1. I have a friend who's sort of a spiritual type person, and his thing is he tries on one breath to say to himself, I am here. In his next breath, he says, here I am. And there's a little scripture that kind of goes with that. And mm-hmm. so when he breathes in, I am here, here I am, mm-hmm. I am here, here I am, repeatedly, it becomes his thing that he finds comforting.
Yeah.
You could use the word peace. Now, of course, you're going to have that chatter from the outside because it doesn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
But the more you're able to focus on the word peace, I am here, here I am, the word one, an image, the feeling of your toes curling, the more you focus on those things, the less power the chatter has over you, because that is the power of language to cause you anxiety. And instead, you're using almost a non-linguistic thing. Even though you're saying, I'm here, here I am, those are words, but if you say any words over and over again, like banana, 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 you know, pretty soon it just becomes a sound. It kind of loses its meaning. So that's one of the things it takes you to a non-linguistic place.
Okay. All right. Another big question that I have is, the way I view this is, it's almost like a muscle that you have to strengthen. And is that true? So in other words, the more you do this kind of process, do you get better and better at it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I was going to say that next, and that is, it's not going to work.
Great.
Yeah. No, but that's part of the passive attitude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not going to make this happen tonight.
Yeah.
Or today.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody can make it happen like that. And nobody can ever make it happen perfectly.
Yeah.
But pretty soon, and, you know, I've suffered from lots of sleep kinds of issues over the years. And I have found overall the best solution for me is, I wake up in the night, I just say one over and over again. I say, I am here, here I am. Mm-hmm. I do one of those kinds of things, and they've all become a comfort to me. It's mm-hmm. sort of like, this is my security blanket. It's mm-hmm. like the blanket that the baby just loves the feel of. And does it always work perfectly? No, but it's my go-to, and I know I can go there. And then I say to myself, and this is just true,
mm-hmm.
as it turns out, I mean, sleep is great, and you know we all want to get the right amount.
Right.
But we also know that sometimes sleep is disrupted, and sometimes we don't sleep well.
Yeah.
And we still survive. And meditation is a great alternative to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Meditation or counter-conditioning, because really one of the big challenges for insomnia is, it gets us upset.
I like that, John, because I think one of the problems I have is, because I'm such a sleep person, is I get a little panicked almost. Like,
I'm not sleeping.
Yeah, and I'm going to be off tomorrow. I'm not going to be on my game, and it's not going to be good, and I get all worried and panicky. And so if I can tell myself, okay, I might not be getting what I want, which is a restful, solid night's sleep, but this is a good plan B.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice second option, right, to be doing the mindfulness. It's better than laying there all stressed out.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
So then you have a very, and, you know, again, like you had said, it's sort of like a muscle. You're going to have to exercise this for a month before really it kind of starts to kick in a little bit and it becomes comforting.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all about counter conditioning. It's about finding an alternative stimulus in your brain.
Yeah.
That you can use instead of the panic thoughts like, oh no, I'm not getting enough sleep. I knew it. I'm having more insomnia. I hate insomnia.
Yeah.
Well, those things can be true. But then if you've got a method to relax yourself, and we know that meditation lowers blood pressure, it is better for your circulatory system,
mm-hmm.
it lowers your heart rate, and you can reap the benefits of meditation instead of sleep. Is it a perfect swap? Not perfect,
no,
but
a good,
it's
plan
a pretty
B.
good swap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. One of my challenges with this that I'm starting to think about is that I imagine, you know, we're all really used to quick response.
Mm-hmm.
We're on our phones and everything's fast and lights fast and things are moving really rapidly. And I'm just going to be honest, I get bored. And I think it's because I am caught up in the same kind of thing. I mean, I'm used to just this quick, fast pace all the time. And when I'm laying there and I go to meditate or do something, I sometimes get anxious.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Well, how can you help me?
Yeah. So now there are other strategies that you might use along with this little meditation strategy or this counter conditioning strategy. And now we're talking about insomnia.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. and strategies for insomnia. And there are a whole bunch of different strategies that might be useful.
Yeah.
But what some people do is if they lay there and they start to feel anxious, they get up and do something, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Maybe they get up for 30 minutes and just do something that will help take the edge off the anxiety and go back to bed.
Okay.
Because laying there anxious is not a useful or helpful response.
Yeah.
So you might get up and do something. You might get up and have a cup of warm tea. You might get up and do whatever it is that might be another soothing stimulus for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, I know I sound like maybe I'm reducing everything to one thing, but the key to self-regulation is really counter-conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
How do we condition ourselves to have certain things that we can think or do or say or experience that we feel comforted by?
Mm-hmm. And I feel like, if I'm hearing you correctly, that one of the ways that we can use this conditioning is with this breathing that you've talked about, the mm-hmm. counting, and I can totally see, I'm going to practice it tonight, just by the way.
Yeah.
I can really see how once it starts to work and you've exercised this muscle and it's effective for you, that in a sense is the conditioned response. Like, I know that it works. This is comforting to me. I'm going to keep doing it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Other things that I'm imagining, isn't this why kids have, you know, soft blankies in bed with them?
Sure.
And a teddy bear?
Yeah.
And why people have pets in their room?
Yeah.
And
a little
all
bit of
that.
White noise yeah. with kids is very good.
Those associations that they just find comforting.
Yep.
So it's all the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so really the other piece is if you find it's not working, a lot of times then the thing to work on strengthening is the passive attitude.
Mm-hmm.
The passive attitude. Well, if we get so hung up on having to have a perfect night's sleep, we're going to lose our passive attitude, and that adversely affects sleep.
Mm-hmm.
The passive attitude will help you sleep faster than the active attitude of, I got a problem, I got to figure it out.
Right. I like it.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, this has been a different kind of an episode.
Yeah.
And I know you might have thought I was just joking, but I really do think that this is one of the methods that parents can use to comfort themselves,
mm-hmm.
imperfectly, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Parents can use to improve their sleep,
mm-hmm.
imperfectly.
Yep.
And parents can teach their children imperfectly.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times if kids and parents have been accustomed to using those external methods like drugs, alcohol, smoking, cutting,
mm-hmm.
sex,
mm-hmm.
wild relationships, all these things that are sort of, they're searching for a way to calm themselves or to be soothed. Those are all external things. And what I'm advocating is find a nice internal comforting method that you can focus on and use instead, and that you will not be perfect at ever. Yeah, ever.
Right, right.
But it's just, that's part of the method, is it? Oh, I just come back to that.
Okay.
It's very boring.
Right, but boring is good sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah. So I really like it. And I think we're going to have another show where we have a whole another menu of mm-hmm. these types of things that people can go to, because not everyone responds to one thing.
Right.
We need choices.
Right.
We're a world of choices.
Yes. And of course, every other strategy that you mentioned from here on, I'm just going to say, well, that's counter conditioning.
I can live with that.
All right.
All right.
All right. Any special resources?
No.
I have one.
Okay.
I have written a blog post, and
oh,
you guys
good.
Can read the blog post on the secret self-regulation cure.
Excellent. I look forward to it. Thank
All
you.
Right. Thanks for listening, Sarah. I know I talked a lot today.
It's very informative, very helpful. I will be thinking of you if I have an episode of insomnia tonight, which I hope I don't.
All right.
And we'll look forward to our next episode where we give even more strategies.
Yeah.
Okay.
And look forward to the insomnia next, because it's sort of like a tantrum.
Right.
You want to look forward to it because that takes some of the teeth out of it.
Right. Very good. Thank you, John.
All right.
The Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast is sponsored in part by the Charles Englehart Foundation, audio engineer Mike Matthews, production assistant Joey Moore, and co-hosts Sarah Polinchek and John Summers Flanagan.